On January 19th, the Supreme Court reversed a 2008 Federal Appeals Court ruling which called for a new sentencing hearing for Mumia Abu-Jamal. This action returned the case back to the 3rd U.S. Circuit of Appeals in Philadelphia, where the case originally took place, and puts Abu-Jamal closer to an execution date. FedUp spoke with Lynn Washington, a Philadelphia-based journalist who has been closely involved with the Abu-Jamal case since the 1982 trial.
Tell us a little bit about who you are and what your involvement with the Mumia case has been in the past.
Yeah, hi. My name is Lynn Washington, and I'm an investigative reporter in Philadelphia. I have been covering the Mumia Abu-Jamal case essentially since the date of his arrest, which would be December 9th, 1981. I've covered, you know, court proceedings. I've read through just about all the legal paperwork that has been filed in this case. We worked together as reporters in the late 70s and early 80s. He was a radio reporter in Philadelphia, and I was a print reporter, but we ended up covering a lot of the same things, police brutality, public housing problems, other, you know, racial inequities in the city of Philadelphia.
And can you explain what happened last Tuesday with his case, the most recent development?
The U.S. Supreme Court issued an order which sent the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal back to the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. The Third Circuit Court of Appeals last year had issued a ruling essentially upholding another federal judge who said that Abu-Jamal's rights had been violated during the death penalty phase of his trial, when the judge presiding at the trial improperly instructed the jury on how to deliberate during the death penalty proceedings. The U.S. Supreme Court, a week before this order in the Abu-Jamal case, had issued a ruling in a case of a person on death row in Ohio, which dealt with a similar legal issue. So the Supreme Court was saying to the Third Circuit Court, take a look at your ruling and see if you need to change it based on our ruling or if you need to keep it in place. So that's what happened. It just bounced it back down to the appeals court. And now there will essentially be another round of appeals, and Abu-Jamal will remain on death row for another year or so. But the specter of immediate execution has been stayed for the time being.
And can you explain what the term the Mumia exception is?
What the Mumia exception means is that the law means the law except when it applies to the Abu-Jamal case. There's been pattern and practice of appellate courts in the state of Pennsylvania, particularly the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, as well as federal courts, the district court, and particularly the Federal Appeals Court and the U.S. Supreme Court, creating new law and or not following existing law in the Abu-Jamal case. So that's the Mumia exception. They have given relief to literally scores of other death row inmates in Pennsylvania, but they claim that the same legal issues that they granted relief on to other people don't apply to Mumia Abu-Jamal. Let me give you a quick example. Pennsylvania and federal courts have overturned 22 death penalties out of Pennsylvania and primarily Philadelphia on the finding that the trial attorney failed to present mitigating evidence during the death penalty phase, meaning evidence that says that their client should not get the death penalty because they have good character or they've, you know, had a bad upbringing or had mental illness or something like that. Abu-Jamal's attorney during his 1982 trial presented no witnesses for mitigation, but the courts claimed that that wasn't an error on the part of Abu-Jamal's attorney, although they found that it is an error on the part of 22 other attorneys in other death penalty proceedings.
And can you explain the political environment which exists inside the court system pertaining to Mumia and how it's fostering the Mumia exception?
Yes, there is a very perceptible bias against Abu-Jamal in the court system. In February of 2000, Amnesty International issued a report on the Abu-Jamal case called A Life in the Balance, the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal. And they found that there's been hostility by the trial judge. as well as bias by appellate courts, particularly at that point the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. And they say that that had contributed to improprieties in the case, which really cried out for a new trial. The politics in this case is pretty much aggravated by the fact that the very powerful police union in Philadelphia, the Fraternal Order of Police, as well as the National Fraternal Order of Police, has made this essentially their cause célèbre to execute Abu Jamal. So they've been pulling all kind of strings to ensure that they achieve their result, and also implicate so many of the very fundamental problems in our justice system: poor representation by trial attorneys, extraordinarily abusive procedures by police, blatant and wanton misconduct by prosecutors, as well as biased actions by judges. Abu Jamal has come to symbolize these improprieties on an international level. So the system, the American criminal justice system and American political system, has a vested interest in essentially telling the world, no, you're wrong on this case. And thus, you know, there's that kind of political meddling at all levels of this case. It's really outrageous, but really extreme in the Abu Jamal case. And to a lesser degree, unfortunately, you find these kind of political improprieties permeating through so many cases across the United States. Just this past summer, Native American leader Leonard Peltier, who's been in prison falsely for over 30 years, was once again denied parole. And I must point out that the entity that opposed his parole formally was the Justice Department of President Obama, who promised as a candidate for president that he would return justice to the Justice Department, and there was no justice in the Leonard Peltier case, as well as many others that have actions that have come out of the Obama Justice Department.
And what are the legal and otherwise options that we now have, or MUMIA now has?
Well, the ruling that is now being contested at the Third Circuit, what the Third Circuit did was say, listen, there were improprieties in the death penalty deliberation, so if you want to reimpose the death sentence, you must hold another hearing for Abu Jamal, which would allow the defense to present evidence. However, the jury would only decide on whether to give him life in prison or a new death sentence. And if that particular hearing does not take place, then he would automatically be sentenced to life in prison. With the case potentially going back to the district court judge, and also with it now being before the Third Circuit Appeals Court, there is the possibility, albeit a slim possibility, that appeals issues that were not heard, or should I say were not considered during the first round of federal appeals, they could be resurrected, and that could potentially lead to a new trial for Abu Jamal. Very remote possibility, but a possibility that exists nevertheless. Parallel to this, there are efforts to have the U.S. Justice Department, Attorney General Eric Holder, to do a civil rights investigation into the Abu Jamal case. This past summer, the National NAACP, at its centennial annual convention, it was 100 years old, they passed a resolution calling on the Attorney General to investigate four cases, one of which involved MUMIA Abu Jamal. And there's also a petition drive to have President Obama declare a moratorium on the death penalty as nationally. A number of states, unfortunately not Pennsylvania, but a number of states have instituted moratoriums on the death penalty, or have suspended it totally, eliminated it totally, because they found that it has been quite biased in its application and extraordinarily expensive in its operation. The state of New Jersey eliminated its death penalty after it found that it spent, I think it was $252 million, $252 million on 60 death penalty cases, of which 52 were overturned. So they're saying, well, this is like just too expensive for us to do this, and there's so many faults with it. But unfortunately, Pennsylvania remains quite dumbheaded about this, and the leaders of Pennsylvania, including the governor, Governor Ed Rendell, who was district attorney of Philadelphia at the time of the original Abu Jamal trial, their posture is, well, listen, we don't care how much money we spend on it, we're going to do this anyway, despite the fact that Pennsylvania hasn't executed hardly anyone in the last 20 years, and the only three executions that we've had in Pennsylvania in the last 20 years have been people who have voluntarily requested to be executed and have stopped appealing their conviction.
What role have you seen the media playing in this case, and what role do you think it can continue to play, both negative and positive?
Well, I have observed the media playing a very derelict role in this. I have characterized media coverage of the Abu Jamal case as a mile wide but an inch thick. The media has not taken this case thoroughly in terms of investigating it. It has accepted lock, stock, and barrel the narrative that Mumia Abu wantonly shot and killed police officer Daniel Faulkner, irrespective of literally a mound of evidence contradicting that assertion. It is the media's job not to take up Abu Jamal as a rallying cry and support. However, it is their job to thoroughly investigate the claims and counterclaims from all sides. And unfortunately, but quite consistently, the media has not done that. And when I say consistently, when we look at other cases around the country, we see a failure of the media to do its job, which is to thoroughly examine the issues in front of it and to hold those in power accountable, as well as providing information to the public. All four of the cases that were part of this NAACP resolution, one out of Georgia, Troy Davis, which has gotten some coverage and much better coverage because now the media has at least reported that all of the eyewitnesses against Troy Davis, except for one, have recanted, and there's been, you know, documentation of other improprieties in the case. But the other two cases, one out of St. Louis and one out of Baltimore, the media is all but ignored. And in the Abu Jamal case, I mean, it's just been ridiculous in terms of the lack of coverage. And let me give you a quick example. That Amnesty International report that I referenced a few minutes ago, when it was published in February of 2000, the media in Philadelphia, which is where this case originated from, basically refused to cover it. The Philadelphia Daily News didn't cover it. None of the television stations covered it. And the all-news radio station here did not cover it. The Philadelphia Inquirer, which was the largest daily newspaper, or is the largest daily newspaper in Philadelphia, did cover it, but it covered it as a 53-word brief. Now, during that time period, or should I say during a three-month time period bracketed before and after the report, issuance of that report on the Abu Jamal case, Philadelphia Inquirer had articles referencing Amnesty International about three dozen times. But the major murder case in the city where Amnesty issued a report saying that that person had not received a fair trial merited only cursory coverage in the Philadelphia Inquirer, which is embarrassing in terms of the media fulfilling its duty consistent with its First Amendment protections. A freedom of the press clause in the First Amendment means the media has a duty, and the media in the United States has been derelict, not only on the Mumia Abu-Jamal case, but on so many cases regarding race and racism in this country.
And what are some resources you can recommend or will recommend for others who want to brush up on their history of the Mumia case or get up to date on what's been going on?
Yeah, I think a real very quick primer on this case would be the Amnesty International report. It's available online. A Life in the Balance, the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal. It was released in February of 2000, going in an Amnesty International site. And or, you know, type in Amnesty International, Mumia Abu-Jamal, or A Life in the Balance. Type that into Google, you'll find it. Two very good books. One is by a guy named Dave Lindorf, L-I-N-D-R-O-F-F. It's called Killing Time, The Case of Abu-Jamal. Came out in 2003. And then there was a book in the last couple of years by a writer named Pat O'Connor. Pat O'Connor looked at all of the transcripts in the case and found a serious improprieties. And ironically, those who feel that Abu Jamal is guilty and want him executed like last year always cite the authority of the trial transcripts. And Pat O'Connor read through all of the transcripts, all thousands, almost, over 20,000 pages between the trial and a very critical 1995 appeal hearing, and found a lot of fault. If I could be somewhat shameless in a plug, just type in my name, Lynn Washington, into Google, and you'll find a number of articles that I've written over the years about the Mumia Abu-Jamal case.
This information was brought to you by FedUp, a chapter of the Human Rights Coalition. To contact us, please visit thomasmertencenter.org/FEDUP or write to FedUp at 5125 Penn Avenue, Pittsburgh, PA 15224.
The Pittsburgh Committee to Free Mumia's next meeting is on Sunday, February 7th at 5 p.m. at the Thomas Merton Center, located at 5125 Penn Avenue in Garfield. For more information, write to PGH Committee to Free Mumia, MUMIA, at gmail.com.